right, so my three-year-old daughter, Hope, you guys know her well by now. She's the crazy one that is generally, when I'm talking about her up here, I'm talking about her on the ground screaming or throwing things or, you know, those kinds of things. Today, I want to talk about her a little differently because recently she's been doing this new thing and I am loving it. I mean, it's awesome to watch. She will come up to me at random moments during the day or the evening, and she'll walk up to me, and she'll go, Daddy, 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 guess what? Guess what? And usually it's when I'm on the phone or I'm in the middle of talking to somebody or whatever, and you know, your natural instinct is to kind of turn to her and go, quiet! And she'll go, guess what? Guess what? Guess what, Daddy? And I'll finally stop and I'll go, what is it, honey? And she'll go, I love you. And then she'll run off. Vroom, off she goes, back into her little world. And so now I've got these moments, you know, that every time she runs up and she goes, guess what? Guess what? Guess what, Daddy? Like, I wait now for it. I stop and I'm like, what is it? She'll go, I love you. Vroom, right off again. You know, I'll tell you, I've told you guys that from the time my kids are born, you know, there's not, I try and make it an absolute point. I mean, I try to make it a point that not a day has the sun rise and the sun set without every one of my children hearing from my mouth that I love them. And it is incredible to begin to watch that emerge now into something of a habit in our home among my children. Okay, so this is really cool, right? So last night, my mother-in-law and my wife's sister just came into town with her daughter, so my kids get to have their niece with them now. So last night, they all get to sleep in Hadley's room, all right? And whenever you put four kids in one room, it's bound to be a disaster zone. So we put them in there, and within 5 minutes, it's all broken down. You know, Paige is crying because she wants to go and sleep with her mom downstairs. Hope's crying because she doesn't want to be in her bed. Cullen's crying because I'm just like, oh, that's it. That's it. Everybody go to your own rooms, right? So my son, he goes to his room. He gets to be the boy and he gets to be alone. And so he's like, he's laying in his bed and he's like, Dad, I don't want to be alone. I want to sleep with someone tonight. So I go, okay, I'll tell you what, buddy. I'll lay with you for a few minutes, all right? I don't usually do that, but I lay down next to my son and I'm holding him and we're just talking. The lights are off. And I start. I always do this. You know, I go, Cullen, hey, you know what, buddy? Dad loves you to the moon and back. And then Cullen will look at me and he goes, oh, I love you to the universe and to Africa and to the world and around the world and the stars and back. And then when we play this little game. So in the middle of this game, I look at Cullen and I say, man, Cullen, that is a lot of love that you have for your dad. Why is it that you have so much love for me? And he turns and he looks at me, and I'm already preparing an answer because usually my kids go, I don't know. And then I got to go, well, is it because your dad is cool? No, I don't usually do that. But So I've got an answer prepared in my head, and my son turns to me and he goes, I don't know. And I go, well, and right as I say well, he goes, I know, I know. And I go, why? And he goes, because you love me. I mean, yeah, that's exactly right. I'm laying on the bed. I'm like, I'm sleeping here tonight. Why would you want to leave? Your little four-year-old boy just looked at you and said, I love you to the moon and back and to Africa and around the world because you love me. That's why I love you. That's what drives my love. My love is driven by your love for me. You know, I told you guys, as we're journeying through the Bible here, as a dad, it is so clear to me to watch the Father God deal with humanity in its infancy. I mean, it is almost identical to the way I would think to deal with my small children as God deals with humanity. And the story we're about to step into today is no different. It is God's incredible way of stepping into the life of human beings and to communicate to them, do you have any idea how much I love you? I love you to the moon and back. I love you all around. And all of this time communicating to us so that someday we would walk up to him and go, guess what? Guess what? Guess what? I love you. And when God goes, why do you love me? We can go, because you loved me. Watch this. The story we're about to get into is a story of outrageous proportions. I mean, this morning, it is really probably one of the stories in the Bible that if you really want to boil it down, if it's mythological, in other words, if it's somebody writing more than they should have, it is so outrageous that it is, you almost look at it and go, if you're going to make up a myth, don't do this one. This one's stupid. Because this one's just too, I mean, it's so obvious that it can't happen that you may as well not make it up because nobody's going to believe you. The only other option, of course, is that it's not mythological at all, that it actually is so outrageous because it actually happened in that way. You guys remember in the story we've been tracking with the new nation of Israel. They have just become a nation while they were under captivity in Egypt. Remember, Joseph started in Egypt as second in command. His family with 70 people come up to Egypt. They get to Egypt, and God says they breed like rabbits. That's basically the way he put it. It's my way of putting it. But they just start growing like crazy. And over a few hundred years after Joseph dies and we move on, we have turned 70 people into a nation of millions of people. I mean, you're talking between 1.5 and 3 million people at this point. Not exactly sure how many people, but a lot of Israelis. So the Hebrew people are there. They're in captivity. Moses comes down. Remember, God met him on the burning bush on the mount in his land of Midian, sends him back to Egypt. He goes to Egypt. The 10 plagues happen, and God whispers to humanity, and especially to the Egyptians, "There is no God like me. I am all powerful. So just keep that in mind when you're dealing with me." And Pharaoh lets the people go. And as they head out, remember the Passover happens right before they head out, the last plague where they paint the doors. And then as they're heading out, God tells them, don't forget to celebrate the Passover. And then we run into this chapter in chapter 13 of Exodus where God says that they need to consecrate all their sons. Remember that? So God begins this covenant type of system so that people can remember. Why do you think God does that? Because you know what people do best? They forget. I'm telling you, that's what they do best. So we're going to jump in chapter 13, verse 17. If you have your Bibles with you, grab them, go to Exodus 13, verse 17. If you don't have a Bible, under the seats, there's Bibles for you. Grab them, that's on page 48. And if you don't have a good Bible at home, by the way, please take one of ours and keep it. We'd love for you to have it. All right, so page 48 in our Bibles, chapter 13 of Exodus, verse 17. It starts like this. The story begins and says, when Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country. Though that was shorter, for God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea. The Israelites went up out of Egypt armed for battle, which basically means the Israelites had some pitchforks and stuff because they were a slave nation and they're coming out and they're ready for whatever it's going to take because they're moving into a land now that's unknown to them. Remember, for generations they've been in Egypt working for the Egyptians. They didn't get vacations where they could travel down to the Holy Land to go and do a little scouting trip. They were in Egypt. That's all they know. And God's sending them into a land they don't know. Now, I want to show you something. Take a look at this map for a second. On this map that you're going to see pop up in a second here, that one right there. There it is. Okay. See this right here? All right. You see up here? Here's Egypt, right? This is the Red Sea as we know it. The Red Sea kind of perks up right here and right here kind of forms a V. This right here is the Sinai Peninsula as we know it. All right. Up here, right there, you can't see it on the map, is the Mediterranean, all right? And if you pop up here this way, this is where you're going to hit Jerusalem and all that kind of cool stuff, okay? So here's the deal. The people, they were right over here. This is where they started, right here. And they lived just outside of the Egyptian center here, and they were the slaves. They came down, did all sorts of work over here, and God sends them out. Now, there was a road that ran up here by the Mediterranean that ran across straight to the Holy Land, all right? That's the road right there. That road right there had a people living on the road. They were known as the Philistine people. They were actually called the people of the sea. Why do you think they were called the people of the sea? Because they lived by the sea, that's right. And the Philistines, you might remember, if you know a little bit about the Bible, later on there's a story we're going to hit about a little guy called David and a big guy called Goliath. And Goliath belonged to the Philistine nation. That's right, they were his champion. Philistines like to fight. And so God knew this. So he knew if he took the people and he went straight up along the Mediterranean here, they were going to run into the Philistines, and that's going to lead to war. And that would be a problem. Also, this road was heavily guarded by the Egyptians during the time. There's another road that runs from here. It runs straight across like this, straight down like this. It was a trade route. It would have been the same trade route that Moses would have taken when he was fleeing after he killed the guard. Remember that, when he killed the guard? He would have fled straight across this trade route, straight across here, down into Midian. Midian sits right down over here, okay? So God leads the people of Israel, begins to lead them down this trade route through the desert instead of leading them up through here, because he knows that they're going to face war up here and they might change their mind and head straight back to Egypt. God does know us, doesn't he? I mean, he does know us. He knows exactly what's going on in here, and he knows exactly what's going on in here before we even figure it out. And so God is constantly strategically doing things in our lives because he knows us. Now watch this. As the people travel across here, this stretch right here is approximately, give or take, about 100 miles or so of really serious desert, okay? And they start heading down, and God sends them down there, and let's pick up the story and see what happens, all right? In verse 19, it says, Moses took Joseph's bones with him. Who was Joseph? He was the guy that started this whole thing back in the beginning when he was taken as a slave into Egypt. He was buried in Egypt as the second in command of Egypt at the time. So his gravesite would have been an honored place. Everyone would have known there's the bones of Joseph. And Joseph made the people promise before he died, if God is going to deliver you at some point into some other place, you make sure you carry me with you, because I don't want to be stuck here in Egypt. I want to be where you are. And so they take the bones with them, and off they go. And through, check this out, in verse 21, this interesting thing is said. It says, by day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night, in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they could travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. Okay, now we start stepping into the outrageous part, all right? I mean, think about it. Seriously, folks. You're the nation of Israel. You've just watched the 10 plagues happen. Supernatural, unbelievable stuff. You've sat in your house as the angel of death passed over the roof. Now, you're heading out of Egypt. You're pretty confident that this God that you're now, that you've called your own, but you're really getting to know now, is leading you. And in front of you, as a nation, there is a pillar of fire at night. I mean, you gotta stand here with me for a second. Are you getting me here? I mean, how hard is it to trust a God when you go, follow me, we're going to go down this way. All right, we're going to turn right over here. I mean, a pillar of fire? And then in the daytime, as the sun rises over the horizon, the fire and fades into a huge cloud, and it just keeps moving. It says the angel of the Lord was with them in the cloud, moving. God is leading them. Let me give you a little, how many of you guys have ever been to the desert before, any desert? How many of you have lived in a desert before? Okay, how many of you have lived in a desert other than one in the United States of America? Okay, now, in the desert, it's interesting in the desert, isn't it? Because temperatures in the desert, they are completely different from temperatures anywhere else, aren't they? What happens during the daytime in the desert? The sun comes up, man, and within hours, it is baking on the sand. Now, I grew up in South Africa. And for 3 years, we lived in a place called Walvis Bay, which is in Namibia, on the southwest coast called the Skeleton Coast. It's where the Namib Desert hits the ocean. And they have these massive sand dunes. And if you get, they called it the Skeleton Coast because if you shipwrecked there in the 18 and 1900s, even if you survived the shipwreck, you were dead because you had a desert that was ahead of you and you would die in the desert. Deserts kill people. Because during the day, the sun bakes down and beats down on you and you dehydrates you and you practically die. And then what happens at night? That's right. If you've ever slept out in the desert, you have to carry a huge pack of warm stuff because at night the temperature plummets. I mean, it plummets. You could, in a day in the desert in Africa, you could have a day that is below freezing at night and well over 120, 130 during the day. And that's in a 24-hour period of time. And you face that kind of life in the desert. You've got 2 million-plus people heading across a desert right over here that's going to take them weeks to cross. At night, they've got to face the reality of plummeting temperatures and darkness. In the desert, it's pitch black, just the stars of the sky. And in the daytime, they've got to face the reality of a sun beaten down on them with no shade whatsoever. What does God do? What does God do? He decides during the day to be what? A cloud. Do you know what you do to clouds in the desert? You run after them. You chase them down and you stand under their shade, and where they move, you move. Woo! Woo! Stay in the shade, because a cloud is an amazingly powerful thing. It blocks the sun, and the second the sun is blocked, it changes everything. It changes everything. Have you ever been out on a boat on a lake? The sun's beaming down on you, or you're laying out on the beach. Laying out on the beach there and the sun's beating down on you. As soon as a cloud covers the sun, you're like, whoa, what happened? Somehow it just removes that edge. During the night, as the temperatures plummet, what's sitting right next to the people? A campfire, but a really, really big one. Because God says he was a pillar of fire. So not only do the people live at night in a relative light, but they live in warmth because a pillar of fire sits next to them, warming them. You know, the people are walking through the desert that should constantly eat away at their souls, and yet God is constantly bringing balance to the problems, isn't he? It's clouds and fire to make sure that in the middle of discomfort, the people experience it to the minimal amount. Unbelievable. So let's see how the story continues. All right, so the Lord says to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp. Okay, watch this. There's a little place which we're not 100% sure, but we're pretty sure now. There's a little place right over here, all right? It's almost like a beach. It's amazing the discoveries that have just recently been made. They used to think that they traveled down here, came across here, and then crossed the Red Sea here, and then went down here and up here, and then buzzed around in the desert here, and then headed up, okay? So instead, what they're finding out is there's a trade route that runs across here to right over here, and there is a place right here where there is a beach, a huge beach section here that could probably easily house an encampment of 2 to 3 million people. And so God sends them down here because the Bible tells us, as they're following the trade route, God tells them right about here, go down to this little place and encamp down here, because God says, it's time for me to take another step in communicating to humanity how this whole thing works with me. Because humanity is so spread out right now, and they serve so many gods, and they don't understand the truth about me. And I have to communicate to them the plan. What is God's plan all along in the Old and the New Testament? What is God up to? Remember, he selected a guy, pulled him out of the nations. His name was Abraham. And he said to him, I'm going to make a great nation out of you that I'm going to love. And then all the people of the world will know me because I am your God. And then they will come to me and they will know my love. And it is through you that I will send salvation. So remember, God, what is God doing? He's communicating to humanity. If you're with me and you follow me, it leads to life and salvation and freedom. If you follow something else, your own way, your own gods, it leads to death and destruction. And so God is communicating to an infant humanity like I would communicate to my little children. And God takes the nation and he says, I'm going to lead you down into the desert because Pharaoh is going to look at your travels. He's scouting out what's going on. He's going to see you traveling down here and putzing around here and camping down here. And he's going to go, oh my gosh, those millions of people, they're lost in the desert. This is perfect. I mean, what kind of a God do they serve? Lost in the desert. I knew it all along. I don't know how they did the whole plague thing, but really. And then Pharaoh's going to change his mind and he's going to send his forces out after you. And God says, I want to show myself to the world through this man and his arrogance, through this man and his pride. You do not want to be in the seat of Pharaoh, folks. Just trust me on that. All right, so Pharaoh sees the people head down here and they start encamping right over here. Now, this little section right here, it's an incredibly mountainous section in the desert, and you walk through these little valleys in between the mountains. So the people kind of weave their way through here and they end up on this beach. This beach right here is a huge mountain range running up like this and a huge mountain range running up like that. So you can't go this way, you can't go this way, you can't go that way because there's a huge sea right there. And you can't go this way unless you're following the trade route. You know what happens? The Bible tells us that as the nation of Israel are sitting on the beach, pillar of fire by night, cloud by day, plagues have just happened, and you're going, wow, this is amazing. I mean, who wouldn't trust God at this point? And it says they look back and they see 600 chariots with Egyptian warriors on them racing through the desert to come and track them down. Now, what they don't know is that all Pharaoh wants to do is collect them, lead them back into Egypt so that he can toy with them again and make them build his stuff. Pharaoh's not a stupid man. He does not want to kill them. He just wants them back. But of course, they look at Moses and they go, what have you done? What are you thinking? All this time we told you, leave us in Egypt. Read it, it's in there. They actually dared to say to Moses, we told you to leave us alone. That was the same people that were crying out to God, save us from this horrible place. That's what we always do, man. God, save me. Not like that. Please. And so here's what happens, right? God leads the people out. They're on the beach. They look this way. They got mountains. They look this way. They got mountains. They look this way. They've got a big, huge piece of water that you cannot swim across, okay? You have no idea. This water, it doesn't look like much right there, right? Because you've got this. Like, ooh, that's big. But this right here, because you know, the lakes in Claremont, you know, if that's like John's Lake, what is this? I mean, you could fall off the jet ski right there and swim right there. But this is different. This is actually a huge body of water that you look across and you go, wow, there's no way. And there's actually two canyons. There's a huge canyon over here and a huge canyon over here that go literally hundreds of feet down. It's unbelievable, all right? So you cannot cross that river by walking. I've heard all sorts of cool theories about they waded through with their ankles in the water, and they were like, God got us across the Red Sea by blowing the water. I mean, can you see Moses? You're on dry ground, baby. And God blew the waters. And that's, seriously, read some of the articles. That's what they say happened. And here they're standing at this body of water. And the Israelites, listen, folks, let's face it. God has just delivered you. You're standing on a beach. You got mountains this way. You got mountains that way. You got an ocean that way. You look this way and 600 chariots, the dust of the 600 chariots are in the air as they come, and you see the horsemen coming. I mean, you've got to ask yourself, are you stupid, God? You're the one that got us here. We were on the trade route. Woo-hoo-hoo. We could have just popped across here, shot down here, and hidden the mountains. But instead, you told us to turn down this way. It was your big cloud that brought us down into the valley. And here we sit on the beach. And now we're going to die. And you know what Moses says to him? Moses says to the Israelites, he goes, shh, shh. We don't have to fight. We don't have to be ready. You just be still and God will deliver us. You just be still and God will deliver us. And then, you know what Moses does? He goes and cries out to God. Have you ever done this? I'm a pastor. I do this all the time. I'm serious. I go to people. They're in the middle of their life. I go to their life and I see that God's going to deliver them. I mean, you can kind of see God's up to something. And I go, God will bring you out of this. I'm telling you. And then I go in my office and I'm like, God, I'm serious, man. I've just put my word on the line here. I know you can do it, but you got to do it. If you don't deliver them, then what are they going to think? I mean, the next time I come and say, God's going to deliver you, they're going to go, ha, yeah, that's what you told me last time. You see what he did last time? So I go to God and I come. So Moses goes to God and he's like, okay, listen, I don't know if I did the right thing, but I told the people you're going to deliver them. We got the mountains right here. We got the ocean right there. And we got these people coming on chariots to kill us. What do you want me to do? How do we know that Moses is crying out? Because God says to Moses, Moses, why are you crying out to me, man? I love when God does that. It's like God, like a parent. Have you ever been in the situation with like your child, your teenager maybe? And you look at your teen and you go, okay, why is it that you don't trust what I'm telling you? I mean, have we not spent the last 14 years loving you? Have we ever done anything to hurt you? Have I ever tried to throw you out of a window or kick you out of the house? I've threatened with that, but have I ever actually done it? Have I ever done any? So why is it so hard for you now when I tell you not to do that, that you have to fight with me on this? I mean, I can see God looking at humanity going, all right, what part of the 10 plagues, the burning bush, the pillar of fire, the cloud during the day, and the leading you out of the desert, did you not catch? Why are you crying out to me? Do you honestly believe that I would lead you this far only to drown you in an ocean? What kind of a God would that be? I'm going to select a nation and drown them all and show the world. If you tick me off, I kill you. No. So God says to Moses, listen, tell the people to keep walking. We need Noah. He could build a boat really fast. Noah built the boat in the desert. Now we got an ocean. Where's Noah? And God goes, take your staff, put it across the ocean, and watch what happens. So Moses sticks his staff over the ocean, and you know the story. If you've ever known a Bible story, you know this one. Sticks his thing, and suddenly it says, like the nostrils of the Lord blew down and parted the waters. I would have loved to be there to see that. I mean, I would. Can you imagine you're in the nation of Israel? There's 2 million of you. All you're watching, the waters behind you, you get that part. You're watching the chariots come. Here they come. They're so close now that they're about to get you. And here's what the Bible says. As the chariots are coming, the angel of the Lord moved from in front of the nation, behind the nation, in between those people and these people. If you are the chariot people, 600 warriors, okay? You're racing. You see the Israelites. They're right there on the beach. You're like, this is a no-brainer. These stupid people walked through the valley onto the beach. I mean, strategically, this was the best case scenario for the Egyptians. And as you're heading, the cloud you see over the ocean suddenly goes and lands between you and them. Exactly. So check this out, right? Check this out. The angel of the Lord stands between the two of them, and it says for the entire night, he created darkness for the Egyptians and light for the Israelis. Isn't that amazing? I mean, I wonder if the Egyptians in the dark could take a peek over the top of the cloud and see a glow on the other side and go, I don't get it, man. I don't get it. And, you know, isn't it at that point that you might go, maybe we should turn back? I mean, at what point after the plagues and the whole thing and now the cloud and the fire blocking you from getting them for an entire night do you go, I'm going to fight this God and I'm going to take him down? You're sitting in your little camp. There's a cloud between you and the people. You're a mother. You've got your children with you. Teenager and maybe a 7-year-old, and you're sitting there and you're going, what's God going to do now? Are we going to be stuck on the beach for the rest of our lives while the little cloud hangs out between us and the people? I mean, it's an inevitability. At some point, they'll either get the guts to run through the cloud or the cloud's going to fade away. But we're stuck here. There's no doubt about that. And then you look at the mountain and go, if God asked me to climb that, I'm staying here and dying because I ain't hiking up that. And then Moses takes his staff and he puts his staff across the waters, and the nostrils of the Lord blow down, and the seas part. And the Bible makes it very clear here, folks. It says that the seas parted, and there was a wall of water on either side. See, God's trying to make a point here. He's trying to make a point so that people like James Cameron can't go, oh, well, you know, they waded through the water on the reeds through their ankles, and God goes, which part of a wall do you not understand? Walls of water, walls. And so Moses says, come, folks, come. We got to cross over here. Can you imagine? I mean, there must have been so much going through their heads that day. I mean, for one thing, I know for sure there were a number of parents looking at their teenagers going, I swear you touch the water and I'm going to ground you for a month. Because you know every teenager is walking up to the wall of water going, wow, that's amazing. Can you see like the, you know, this is a big sea, like, I think that's a really big fish. You think we can catch it? If I jump into the water, will you grab my hand and pull me back out? Get back here! I told you to stay by my side. I heard you whispering about jumping in the water. But I also wonder if there wasn't maybe a parent or two walking along in the middle of two great walls of water as the nostrils of God parted the seas, carrying their 7 or 8-year-old and whispering to them in their ear, you pay attention now. You pay attention now. Do you see what God is doing here? Do you see the kind of God we serve? You pay attention now and you don't forget this, because we are walking through the middle of an ocean on dry ground because our God delivers people. I wonder if there wasn't a mom walking along, tears running down her face going, this is, what do you do with this? What do you do with a God like this? How do you thank him when you get to the other side? How do you tell your children that are 2 and 3 years old, honey, when you were 2 and 3, we walked through the Red Sea because God blew the waters apart. Do you remember that? I mean, what must have been going through their minds? I get to the other side and the cloud rises up and the Egyptian army looks across at this wall of water and this dry ground, and in all the human stupidity that we can be when we're prideful, they go, let's take them down. It's obvious that they've built some kind of an invisible wall and it'll stay while we run. I mean, what part of death and destruction in the previous few weeks do you miss? And as they're heading across, the Bible says God allowed the wheels of the chariots to fall off. And it was at that point, in the middle of the Red Sea, with walls of water on both sides, chariots' wheels off, finally the warriors go, we should turn back because this God is fighting for Israel. I'm like, what? Are you serious? It took you that long to figure out that God was fighting for Israel? It just blows my mind. But you know, I know us. I know my daughter. I know my kids. I know when they're 15, they're going to go, you don't love me. And I'm going to go, when you were 4, you ran up and hugged me. And you said, I love you because you love me first. And he'll go, I did not. I'll go, yes, you did. Because people forget. And in the middle of the ocean, God says, Moses, put your staff out. And he puts his staff out, and the oceans come crashing back in. And it says not one of those warriors survived. Not one horse survived. You know what's really cool about this story? That in recent days, in the last couple of years, after they figured out that this was probably the most likely route coming down here, they started searching for evidence of a great journey through here by millions of people. And they found evidence all the way along this route. And then right over here, right across this ocean over here, this is the coolest thing. They found inside the water here, all the way down here and over here, there are coral all over this. It's a great sea to go scuba diving in. And right across here, there is I watched this. They're diving under the water and it's just sand. And wherever the sand is, there are these coral things that just pop up randomly in the middle of the sand, which is completely unusual for coral because coral has to grow on something. It doesn't grow on sand, right? Except that all these coral things, it's the oddest coral they've ever found. It goes straight up, and then it has a big circle on the top. So what coral will often do is, if there's a metal item, for instance, it'll grow on it, and then over thousands of years, the metal will decompose and disappear, but the coral will stay because now it's established. And so you swim through this section, right, between one huge deep canyon and another huge deep canyon. There's this almost a sandbar kind of ridge thing right across there that was still, you know, very deep, but not nearly as deep as the canyons. And there's all this coral on it in these. And then they found, listen to this. You should go and check this out. They found a wheel of a chariot, an actual wheel, but they can't move it because it's so fragile that if you touch it and you try to move it, it'll just break into pieces. So they just leave it there and take pictures of it. They found bones in there, bones that have been preserved by the water that are the exact same size of a horse's femur. Isn't that amazing? And you go, yeah, right there, they waded across ankle deep. Right there. That's what they did. So here's the deal. What is this all about? Where does this all go? How does this all play out? What on earth is God up to here? Because we're about to walk into an incredible time in the nation of Israel, but even more so, an incredible time in the world of humanity and God's communication to us. Let me tell you what God is whispering to us over and over again in this one story. God whispers to us that in this life as we walk, as we go, that He knows us so well, that He is constantly strategically directing our path so that we don't end up in a war zone. We think the best route is right up here, right there, heading up in the top. And God goes, no, I know that you're going to hit war there, and then you're going to want to turn back and you won't persevere. So He doesn't take us that way. So He takes us a different way. And then when He takes us a different way, sometimes that different way isn't easy. And in the middle of a desert, God will show up as a cloud and show up as a pillar of fire to warm us at night, to guard us from the sun during the day. So that even though we experience the desert, we have no idea that in fact we are experiencing a world much less harsh than it should be. When you're going through the toughest times in your life, just know it's very likely that they could be a lot tougher. But God is a cloud and a pillar of fire. And what does He whisper? I love you. I know so many parents of teenagers, they'll come into my office all the time, especially when I was in youth ministry, and they'd go, my child, or young adults, my child just got in a lot of trouble and this thing happened, and I think I'm going to take care of it for them. And I want to look at them and say, let him suffer, man. They're never going to learn if you don't just let them take the brunt of this. And you know what parents tell me all the time? Yeah, but they're my kid. Yeah, but they're my kid. And I love that because that's exactly what God's doing here. Yeah, but these are my kids and I'm going to take care of them in the desert. I'm going to make sure they don't experience the results of all of this to its full degree, and I will save them. And then God finally whispers to us, when you get into that place in life where you're standing in a valley and you got a mountain to your right and a mountain to your left, you got the Red Sea behind you and you got the nation of Egyptians heading straight at you, and you know it's time to die. Maybe it's at your workplace. Maybe it's in your marriage right now. Maybe it's with your kids. I don't know what it is, but you just know. God whispers to you going, don't worry. There is a way to take you out of all this. I will deliver you. I will deliver you. God is whispering to us, I love you, and He's doing it so that we can whisper back, I love you too, because you loved me. That's what God is up to in this story. So may we whisper this week, I love you, God, because you love me. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for your incredible love for us. Thank you for what you're doing in our lives. Thank you for loving us first so that we can love you. We just pray that this week, in small and big ways, you would remind us of your incredible love for us and you would show us the way into your salvation and freedom. Help us to remember, regardless of the circumstances we find ourselves in, that you have already selected a way out. Thank you for whispering to us that you love us to the moon and back. May we just say that we love you to Africa and the world and the universe and back because you love us first.
Amen.